Something big is cooking during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot with the Weber Jumbo Joe Premium Charcoal Grill. We're talking almost 2 feet across big. That's 13 burgers at once big. Right now, get the Weber Jumbo Joe Premium Charcoal Grill for just $99.98 at the Home Depot and bring that classic charcoal experience to your cookout. Buy it online and pick it up in-store to get to grilling sooner. Go big during Spring Black Friday with the Weber Jumbo Joe Premium Charcoal Grill, now just $99.98 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome back to NBC Sports Edge's DFS Building Block Show, week 14, that is, as well. As always, I'm your host, John Daigle, joined by friend in life, Kyle Dvorak. As always, we review the previous week's slate through our live video every Sunday night, halftime of the football game, and you can watch that on replay at the NBC Sports Edge YouTube page Monday morning. So with that, I think we should just go ahead and kick off the week 14 main slate, because it's a wild one, with some late news to discuss throughout the show as well, and two games that are really in focus. Let's say three, actually. Three games that are really in focus, but nonetheless, some pivots, some really cheap options that we can argue about throughout the show as well. Kyle, I just want to start with your decision point and some thoughts overall on this slate.
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to think of past decision points. We've had like the very obvious running back, whether it be a super like not priced up enough, sort of like Jonathan Taylor of last week, or the super cheap running backs. It has been a specific like one quarterback on the slate is the only good quarterback. And then I would say maybe the third type of, or maybe it's not even a quarterback, it's specifically a pay range at quarterback. Like all the good quarterbacks are pay up, or maybe they're all pay down. The decision I think this week is a third option, which is there is like one good game. Obviously that game is Tampa Bay versus Buffalo. It has a 53.5 point total. The next closest total, 5 points below that. There's a gulf between this game and the next game, but it's not like we haven't seen this before. This was, I believe it was a very big gap between the Kansas City Dallas game and the next best game. And that's because that game got all the way up to like 56.5. If I remember correctly, may have ended up coming down like 55.5, which was very clearly the highest scoring game. And as we saw, I think that game had more systemic risks just from the team and personnel like side of things. But that game miserably failed under and we on the recap show after that, we even looked at it and said, like, I'm not really sure how you could have made positive expected value lineups with like a 28-30% Tyreek Hill. Travis Kelce was popular on the other side. All the Cowboys were popular. I was like, oh, Dalton Schultz got overlooked. That would have been an interesting way to play this game. And that was like one of the very few angles I could put together. And it feels like we have at least a situation that's akin to that with Buffalo versus Tampa Bay. Both teams pass heavy, both teams extremely potent offenses, both teams have a ton of fantasy options worth exploring. It's really, can you find ways to uniquely build lineups that feature stacks or even players from this game? Or is it one where like you go full GPP bro and just say like, yo, if this game hits 21-13, I am printing because I played all the other good plays. I'm not entirely sold. I still think as it are with like most, like I thought you could build good Dalton Schultz, you know, Tyreek Hill, Byron Pringle lineups, right? I thought it was a very narrow cross section of that game that was playable. I feel the same way about this game, I think, for the most part. I think the cross section might be a little bigger because I think there's some overlooked spots. But overall, to me, like neither of these teams are even the highest implied team total. And it's like Kansas City is supposed to score the most points of the entire main slate of the entire week, actually, according to Vegas, according to sportsbooks. So there are, I think, viable paths to getting off this game. And if you do play it, you have to really try to build unique versions of it because you're just going to be duping with. And as we've seen, like, I know in the Cowboys game, the Cowboys Chiefs game, we saw projection systems vastly underestimate. For me, across the board, I looked at a lot of different projections and they all thought it would be the most popular game. it was not, that was not nearly enough. They weren't going far enough and saying everyone's going to play this. We didn't see, at least in projections, three times as much ownership on Tyreek Hill versus Davante Adams on that slate. And I think we'll see something similar where, Chris Godwin, he's going to be real popular. He's going to push 18, 19, 20. That's a lot for, no, he's going past that. You're going to have, Brady should be a top three, top five owned quarterback. No, he's going to be the number one or number two most owned quarterback. So I think that's also something you have to account for. I think projection systems in terms of ownership are going to miss is just how much the zeitgeist is going to gather around this game. So to me, this is sort of a storm of events that say this game is the decision point.
I agree with you. I will also come over the top and say, I don't think I like that game. And I agree with you. I am not scared of people trying to end me with Josh Allen and Tom Brady at all. We know the Bucs have the second highest blitz rate in the league. We know they're going to blitz Josh Allen's face off. We know he's completed 59% of his passes against the blitz for 6.5 yards per attempt. I am not scared of Josh Allen. I will say it right now in this slate, famous last words. Brady, before this Falcons game, and remember, like the past two seasons with the Bucs, Brady's average 375 yards and three touchdowns against the Falcons. We knew that was a blow-up spot, right? Like, we talked about that. That's why we were playing Evans over Godwin. Godwin, of course, only just set a franchise record in catches. Nonetheless, though, we knew we were on their pass-catching options without a doubt. No big deal. Remember, the three games out of the Bucs' bye, Brady didn't break a slate or injury at all. He had five touchdowns and four picks in those three games prior. In soft matchups, I would say, as well, and against Washington, the Giants, and the Colts. It was just the Falcons that he stood upright in the pocket, was not hit at all, and just delivered quick throws to Gronk, Evans, and Godwin without any trouble at all. So I would argue, I don't care about that game. Now, the factor of Tre'Davious White missing, what does this do for Evans? That's the thing I keep coming across, because we really still haven't seen the Bucs or the Bills defense without Tre'Davious White. And does he matter that much? Since that would have been where Evans plays, they basically put him on an island before this. He was a key part of their defense. And since we only saw three pass attempts on Monday night against the Patriots, like, we just don't know really what this defense is going to do. Do they just crumble? I doubt it. But even if they become league average, then that's how Brady gets his touchdowns here between Gronk, who seems to be a mainstay, and then you can make your choice between Evans and Godwin. But overall, I think the Fournette pivot, it's another week where it's just fine, especially because you mentioned, like, running backs at the top. We started the week with only running backs to pay up for, and even then, it was like three or four. You could make the case for Austin Eckler, Alvin Kamara, who's gotten stronger and more interesting as the week has gone along, not only for me, but for the whole entire field. He's probably going to be a tremendous cash game play. And then Joe Mixon was also a pivot to argument, whereas now, like, we got a bunch of cheap guys, too, that everyone might chase. We'll argue about those throughout the show. But overall, like, I think Fournette is an awesome pivot just to take the floor as well, just to now be the 17% target share guy since they're bye, no one else involved. Also, it looks like the Bills will be without interior player star Lotu Lelele. And we know the Bucs are not going to run the ball. That won't matter at all. Also, Fournette running the ball has been terrible. He's been getting there because of the targets and the passing game usage. So now what if we just take that, knowing that, like, even last week, 51 passes to 15 running back carries. The week before, when he scored four touchdowns, like, he at least got the touchdown equity. But even then, it was 34 passes to 24 running back carries as a whole. Ronald Jones involved for seven carries at the end when there was a blowout game script. But yeah, overall, like, I'm totally fine just taking Fournette in that game. Maybe mixing in a little Cole Beasley, since over 50% of his targets has come against zone coverage. And that's like the stinky skinny stack. But it's not a game I fear that's going to end me in this slate.
I would say I fear that it ends me because it has extremely high total and a ton of talented players. But that is not to say I think you should just automatically be playing the good players in it. So I would say I am afraid. This seems like a game that could put up a lot of points, but I am not afraid to the extent that I think you have to play the game. I know for a fact I will be playing some. I actually thought the Cole Beasley call was really interesting. He's been completely abysmal over the past, like, 4 or 5 weeks, but outside of the one or two games where he was clearly dealing with a rib injury, had that 9-snap game, he's still been third with a very significant gap over Gabe Davis in routes run. He's playing the role he was playing early in the season. That was resulting in, like, multiple 13 target games. It just hasn't happened for him recently, but the role change really isn't there. The only possible discrepancy you could say is, well, that Dawson Knox was missing some of those games, but that hasn't taken Beasley really off the field that much. So I think Beasley, maybe even to a lesser extent Sanders, can be, like, viable pivots off of what I would imagine the chalk option would be, a Godwin Diggs, Josh Allen stack, if you take it from the Josh Allen side. So any of the non-Diggs plays, I think, are maybe positive expected value. I still don't even know if that's something I would play, because I agree. I think this game, like, I am scared of it, but in the sense of, do I think I'll be playing it? Not as much as the field. I think that's at least where I draw the line, is that I'm going to try and play it in some weird ways. Fournette as leverage off of all of the passing options or the receiving options of Tampa Bay, maybe some Mike Evans. But I also do get vibes that, like we saw when Chris Godwin, or when Keenan Allen, actually, when we saw Keenan Allen was the chalk cash game play, he either came in popular, but Mike Williams was surprisingly popular as well, or he came in actually not that popular in tournaments and people just went full flipping the script and playing Mike Williams. But there was two outcomes where at least one of them in both were popular, if not just both of them. And I think this is a spot where Chris Godwin, like, simply breaks ownership, and then Mike Evans comes in as still popular because the people who aren't playing Chris Godwin chose to play Mike Evans over him. So I really find it difficult to play, like, a ton of, like, to me, it's the ancillary receivers. Maybe you're just going Evans, Brady, and Breshad Perriman, who ran nearly as many routes as the other two receivers, right? But, like, maybe you could say Gronk won't be that popular because his price has come up on DraftKings, but I still think he'll be at least one of the top five or seven owned tight ends. Maybe there's some leverage to be had there, but really it's like Cole Beasley, Fournette, if you just want to leverage off of the passing game. Breshad Perriman are some weird one-offs you could play in this, but they're not, like, particularly good plays. They're just a way that won't be popular. So I'd rather play Chiefs. Was this your decision point too? Because to me, it feels like it's the most obvious game of the week. And it's, like, relative to the rest of the games, one of the more obvious games of the year relative to what we have as the other options on the slate. Now, does its obviousness mean you have to play it? No, obviously not. We're talking about it right now. You're not afraid. I am afraid, but that's, you know, that doesn't stop me, right?
I'm more afraid. This is my decision point. I'm trying to figure out what to do with the Chiefs, because they became a worse team to become a better team. Like, they're not scoring fantasy points. What do I care about the Chiefs? Patrick Mahomes hasn't thrown multiple touchdowns in five of his last six games. It just happens to be, of course, the cover three scheme of the Raiders. This is the last time he did break the slate. It was a Sunday night football game, so we didn't have to worry about him. Now we have to worry about him, but it is the Jonathan Bell's overall theory of the second time two divisional opponents play, scores typically come in under their under on average. They score lower points because they're familiar foes. And so we have a little bit of that working for us. But just the fact, like I already mentioned, five freaking touchdowns last time, a few weeks ago, when they played the Raiders, but Mahomes has not thrown two touchdowns in five of his last six games surrounding that. And so even going back to last week in primetime, Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Darrell Williams led the team in receiving. Like, those were the best receivers. Tyreek Hill hasn't gone over 100 yards since October 3rd. It's been two calendar months, and he hasn't broken the slate either. So that's what I'm asking. Like, okay, well, am I worried about these guys too? I think Travis Kelce is an amazing option, as he was the last time he played the Raiders as well. His splits against cover three as well, significantly better than most matchups, especially in man coverage. And so, like, that's a play it seems to get on, especially since it seems like the pivot this week, just like last week with Foster Moreau, you get contrarian at tight end just by not playing Austin Hooper or Jared Cook. I like Jared Cook too. But overall, it seems like just by not doing that and spending up instead, you're automatically, like, contrarian depending on what stacks you go. And so that's what I'm trying to figure out right now. How do you feel about the Chiefs offense? And also, I want to hear your thoughts on both, because the Raiders players, you can make a case for all of them. Hunter Renfrow, at least 9 targets in 5 of his last 6 games, and too cheap on DraftKings, where you get the point bonus, so 6,100. Josh Jacobs, 29 targets total without Henry Ruggs, has become a legitimate receiver, and now we have no Kenyon Drake. So even a negative game script, you would imagine he's not coming off the field. So he's a high floor option like Fournette that maybe you just take the points and then get the hell out of that game and try to stack sneaky elsewhere. And then, of course, Foster Moreau flop lag. He was not the every down player. That's why we played him at 2,700 if we did play him. But at 4K now, I think it's still reasonable. And a negative game script, he's probably going to see more targets, run more routes. So even on 85% of snaps of last week, perhaps that increases out of no choice because they're playing from behind.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'd rather stack this game because I think it'll be relatively unpopular. The only concern is that, like, it is a bit, like, on the nose that, of course, the one good game, and it literally is, it's like one good game in the past almost 2 months for Kansas City came against this team. They do have the highest implied team total of the slate. So I think it's not like wildly contrarian. I'm not playing this 1%, you know, garbage stack. People will still probably go to Mahomes at a top 6, 7, 8 rate, but I think there will be a pretty big gap between Brady and Josh Allen stack ownership versus something like the Mahomes stack ownership. And especially, I think when you get into the ancillary pieces of this game, anything that isn't really Renfro or the Chiefs big names, when you finally move to a, say like a Byron Pringle, he's not like, dude, definitely not a good player in the grand scheme of every team in the NFL having five receivers. You wouldn't want him to be in your top five, but he's clearly cemented himself as the wide receiver too in terms of the number of routes run. And he's not like priced to a point where anything other than like a long touchdown, that's probably enough to get you there. So to me, I think I'd rather play this. It does line up perfectly as the opponent they've beaten. Like, I think they beat them for a reason, right? It's not just randomness. We're not finding completely no signal in the fact that it was obviously a defense that wasn't willing to conform to the one style that easily has a trump card over the Chiefs, right? There is some signal in that. I think it is a little bit on the nose. I think people might read into it a bit much, but there's a game that people want to play so much more. And I'm still willing to buy in on the Chiefs as having one of the 2 to 3 best tight ends, one of the two or three best receivers, and I still think the best quarterback, although his numbers like concerningly have been down. Like, Pro Football Focus has his big time throw rate at like well under half of what it's been at like his worst other years in his career. His ADOT, Mahomes ADOT, has dropped. It is the lowest since his rookie season, which he played one game. So it's his lowest. So there are like non-zero concerns, right? This is not the same Chiefs team, but if there were a time for it to be, I would be against this defense. It would be also at relatively tampered ownership because there's a better game. So I'm in on the Chiefs this week. I think just as a pure play, they are, in terms of ownership, a far better play. Like, I hate to have so much conviction in anything, right? Because we're just playing ranges of outcomes. But given what I think the ownership will be, that's why I believe they're a far better play.
Would you pick in a one-off Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce, given the positions of the slate? You could try to fit both. It's very tough because you don't get any discounts on Chiefs players. DraftKings in particular, $8,500 on Tyreek and Mahomes and $7,500 on Kelce. You have to pay premium prices. The issue is if you try to put both in with Mahomes, then you know what everyone's going to do. Everyone's going to then jam in some of these terrible cheap running backs. Like, they're going to make the choice between Godwin and Buke or Jamar Jefferson. They're going to make the choice between Ty Johnson or Austin Walter. Like, they're just going to shove in these touch guys that are awful plays. And so, like, how do you rank them according to how we're building lineups?
I think I would probably take Tyreek Hill. I think Hill is the one who is still more likely to put up 50-point games. He has, I believe, has multiple 50-point games, DraftKings points in his career, whereas Travis Kelce has multiple 40, no 50s. Obviously, there's a positional utility to it. But we've also seen in, it's like something on like 3 or 4 consecutive years now, Travis Kelce ADOT has continued to drop. And when he's over 30 years old now, like, this shouldn't be the most surprising. I don't think he's quite peak Kelce anymore. And his usage says, at some fundamental level, even though the offense has also trended in this direction, his trend has been not just this year. It's been in previous years as well. His ADOT keeps coming down just a little bit every year. I think he's just less of an exciting option to go to, although I think he's perfectly fine. I just generally trend towards when I think there isn't like a massive ownership edge in either one. I think both Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce will come in somewhere between, say, 8 and 15%. Tyreek Hill usually ends up being a little more popular, I believe, but I don't think it'll be more than 3 or 4%. I don't think that's worth taking what I believe is a probably significantly lower ceiling, even if his position does normally have lower ceiling. So I would personally go Tyreek Hill. I will certainly have some Travis Kelce, though, because Mahomes will probably be like my highest owned quarterback, at least.
Knowing the Cowboys now know they can't run the ball, doesn't seem like Pollard's going to play. Yeah. And if he did, he'd just get 8 touches and have to score a long touchdown to provide fantasy value anyways. Knowing that they had the 5th highest pass play rate in neutral game script last week, and that was 44 plays for neutral game script. They just passed the ball since everyone was available finally. Even Amari Cooper playing a season-low in snaps was at least available, had that big 41-yard catch. Where do you rank the Cowboys passing game, the double stacks? And it's kind of hard, too, with Dak and Amari Cooper are still good prices. CeeDee Lamb, 7,200, right there, like behind Tyreek Hill, 8,500. But where do you rank them next to like the Chiefs, the Bills, and the Bucks that everyone's going to be attacking?
Yeah, I think they're another one of the reasons that I believe there are viable pivots off of, like, that's probably another one. I will be more overweight on them than I will be on any of Josh Allen or Tom Brady. Their implied team total is lower, but they also just get like, you think the Tampa Bay matchup is good. Like, Tampa Bay at least has like some competent defensive players. Like the Washington matchup is the matchup of all matchups. I believe they are bottom five in both passing yards per game allowed and yards per attempt allowed. Teams throw on them and they do it successfully. And as you said, like I really struggle to see how Zeke, who there have been reports, and obviously Jerry has said, no, he's getting the full workload. But there were literally reports as of like a week ago that were like, he needs shut down. He is also very beat up. And it's shown because he's been like one of the least efficient backs over recent weeks. So I think it sets up perfectly where their opponent wants them or, you know, goads them into passing the football. Their running game is going to give them no support that Dak double stacks. Like, I think those are much better, again, in terms of ownership. They won't project as well, I don't imagine. But in terms of the ownership discount you get on them, I will be playing Dak double stacks. Like, I think Mahomes is a good pivot over something like a Brady single stack or whatever the boilerplate Brady type of lineup is. I think a Dak stack is even almost better just because it will drop another tier of ownership.
I think Dak, and we're still waiting word on JD McKissick. He's questionable, but man, like the Dak double stacks with JD McKissick is such an awesome play if we get McKissick in this game. Like the narrative is that Antonio Gibson, 27 touches the past month, workhorse. When I just look and say, well, Washington has trailed for 7 offensive plays over the last month in the second half. Antonio Gibson's role hasn't changed at all. Or at least I would like to make that bet. Whereas this is the game script, if we already talked about, the Cowboys recognize they can't run the ball now. No Pollard, just Zeke. The pass play rate from last week. Well, if that's the case, this is the same game script that we played McKissick, remember, I'd argue with you on, against the Chiefs with Washington. Because, like, they will put McKissick in that role. And, like, that's the narrative you tell yourself. Dak, Lamb, Cooper, or Dak, Cooper, Gallup as well if you want to get cheaper. And then you put in McKissick, and, like, you got your cheap running back that everyone will overlook as opposed to the other guys they're trying to stuff in as well. So like, I think that right now shaping up is one of my favorite stacks for this week.
I think people react more, I think significantly more to players getting ruled out than players coming back in, because there is some sort of creeping up sense of like, oh, you don't have to go out and like see, oh, well, JD McKissick is not playing. There's a big headline. And then Antonio Gibson, 3 downs. JD McKissick just kind of seamlessly sneaks back into the lineup, and you don't really get the sort of hyper reaction to him coming back into the lineup that you do when he originally goes out. I think Gibson at 6K without McKissick is well underpriced. He's a 3 down beast, but Gibson with McKissick, they showed us for like literally 12 weeks or something. It was probably like 10 weeks. It's like 10 weeks up until their bye that they have a clear split. My only problem with McKissick is he's not like super punchy. People lose 5K on DraftKings, but I don't think that's a reason like in a really large field tournament not to get to him. I think it's perfectly fine. Would you play Terry McLaurin also at 7K? Like imagine a McLaurin, CeeDee Lamb, and you know, Dalton Schultz. That kind of lineup. You spent a lot of your salary on this game, but I think in a large field tournament, it's worth it. I play large field, so I probably will have some of that. But which I guess it's more of a Terry McLaurin question, right? Are you playing Terry McLaurin?
Oh, man, it's so sad to say. I think I'm more interested in McKissick than McLaurin, just given the landscape of the slate, given that I know everyone's going to pay down at running back, but they're not going to play the stack that makes sense. And like McKissick is the stack that makes sense, especially because everyone wants to play Gibson. They're citing the team splits, like since these are the only two games Gibson did well in last year. That's basically why he finished as the RB12 in fantasy points per game, was because of his two games against the Cowboys. And just knowing all these things, like everyone thinking his usage changed, maybe his usage did change over the last month. But again, we haven't seen any reason for his usage to change. I would like to see it first. And then if they're like down by 2 scores all of a sudden, does he stay out there? I'd like to find out, and I'd like to put my money on finding out. So I think that's really interesting. Also, like, trust me, I got a worse stack coming up for you. Remember, we 7X'd with Ben Roethlisberger last week. I got a worse one this week. Don't worry. We'll get there eventually. But while I pull up our DFS projections at our toolkit at NBCSportsEdge.com, go ahead and tell me what player you're going to be over the field on, even in large field tournaments this week.
Yeah, I think one that, because I was, you know, glad you brought up the Cowboys game. I think CeeDee Lamb is good, but Amari Cooper was still running nearly even on him, even with him on targets, until they had all of their receivers kind of get jumbled up for a variety of reasons. I think Lamb had rightfully taken a slight edge, but right now I don't even see Amari Cooper popping as that popular right now. And at 5,900, like early in the season, we would have been dying to pick up like, you know, this cheap of Amari Cooper in a perfect spot. So, you know, we talked about this game as a potential pivot. And I think Amari Cooper is like the ideal stacking option with Dak. It still is affordable enough that you can pay wherever you want for other expensive options. But Amari Cooper, because I'm in on this game, to me, his price is off and ownership doesn't really seem to be reflecting that. Like, I think it's just a pretty meh price for a player who has like 30 plus pretty easily within his range of outcomes. And I'm not seeing ownership sort of reflect that right now. You can let me know if you think he will end up being more popular, but I think he's well sub 10%. Whereas like,
there's no way. Everyone always plays CD over Amari. Like, there's no way.
Yeah, it's there are always these dynamics where Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Keenan, Mike Williams. Yeah. I especially think like Godwin is a good one. People love playing Godwin.
The teammate pivot, as we dubbed it. We have 5 more weeks to create a better name than the teammate pivot. But yeah, the Cordero Patterson over Kyle Pitts, even though no one plays Kyle Pitts anymore, and I will never play Kyle Pitts. But yeah, those little edges. That's why I also think, while Gallup is not a target hog, and like you were worried about his floor, you're playing him for his ceiling games. And we know he's the big play special. Well, CeeDee Lamb, of course. But Gallup also, you know, want a couple deep bombs, one that goes for a touchdown. You could get away with 16 a touchdown with Gallup for 5K. Like, that's totally reasonable. Also, like, the difference in salary between CeeDee Lamb at 7,200 and then Cooper under 6K is pretty egregious, right? If assuming we get 99% snap Cooper, like, it should not be like that at all.
Yeah, I think that's what I was sort of alluding to. I think CeeDee Lamb's perfectly fine in play. I don't even think he'll be like crazy popular, because I think as we move our way down towards the less and less popular games, it will like decrease almost exponentially, right? Because we're going to get a ton of ownership on Buffalo, Tampa Bay. Still some people trying to play tournament style pivot and go to the Mahomes versus the one team he's beaten. I think as you sort of scale yourself down to this game and essentially any other game on the board, there's one other game I think will be popular, at least from one side of it. But by the time you get to this game, it's not like a ton of leverage by playing Amari as a pivot off of CD as much as I think just a poor pricing discrepancy. Like we saw early in the season, they were pretty close to even. I think CeeDee Lamb's better. I think he'll draw more targets on average, but not to a degree of $1,300 on DraftKings.
I have quite a few plays I'm probably going to be over the field on. I like a lot of guys this week. Alvin Kamara, I still love. It's very sad that he's now going to be popular, because I thought we were going to get him like under Austin Eckler. You would expect Kamara to be higher rostered than Eckler, right?
I think so. I'm not sure like either of them are incredibly popular, because stacking the game that is the most popular, I think, will be difficult to do in conjunction with a super chalky sort of Eckler or Alvin Kamara. But yes, they still will be among the more popular plays. But you alluded to it earlier, when you're playing, you know, Evans, Godwin, you can't even play the other, like, you can't play Stephon Diggs in that lineup, right? You have to play Evans, Gronk, or God. People don't play Evans, they play Godwin. Godwin, Gronk, Brady, and Diggs, at that point, they're going to these cheap, bad running backs. So I actually think, like, mid to cheap price quarterback and Kamara or Eckler are probably fine. But yeah, I do think Kamara is more popular, assuming we have no Mark Ingram. Has he been ruled out yet?
No, he and Ty Montgomery are still on the COVID list. I would expect both to get ruled out tomorrow.
Yes, I was going to say, I don't think he's technically been ruled out.
We did this with, man, we keep doing this in every, and I understand reporters have their job, we have our jobs, but even like some other people just keep on saying like, oh, like all they got to do is test negative twice. It's like, dude, how many times do we have to do this year? Like, Keenan Allen was put on the list Monday and everyone's like, oh, he could come back. It's like, bro, he's not coming back. Yeah. We do this every week. And he got rolled out today. Like, we stop doing this.
I feel like it's like wanting to not be wrong or being afraid of being wrong thing. Last week, on one of the live Q&A shows, Alvin Kamara had seen 3 limited practices. And I was like, dude, guys who get in a single limited practice always play. And I was like, guys, don't even think about Mark Ingram. You're going to, and Kamara didn't play. So like, it's this sort of fear.
I had the in on that one. You should have texted me on Wednesday. I kind of knew it, but we digress.
It was me and 10 viewers on a 6 p.m. Q&A. So it could have been worse. It could have been a worse spot.
Another few of my favorite plays. Everyone's going to ask the question, Tube Socks here. I just recognize the name. I also asked the question, Guyton or Palmer. How about sometimes the answer is neither? And so I think, you know, this totally is probably not the answer either, but I kind of love Donovan Peoples-Jones this week. The reason we played the Steelers was because the Ravens' terrible defense, and a Ravens defense that is still allowing a league high in 20-plus yard pass plays this year. And remember, like, Donovan Peoples-Jones, he did get 5 targets for the bye, but he also dropped a 50-yard touchdown. Maybe that happens again, but like, it wasn't the fact that he wasn't getting open. He's the team's only deep threat, and I just wonder if it's the same boring game script for both these teams since both defenses are bad. Like even the Browns, Lamar has struggled against the blitz this year. The Browns don't blitz. They've blitzed at the 24th highest rate in the league. Now, I will say they've altered their approach and blitz quarterbacks in some cases this year that have been bad against the blitz. But overall, like I think that game is kind of sneaky for Marquise Brown, Donovan Peoples-Jones, skinny stacks. Also, Donovan Peoples-Jones is not only a pivot off the cheap, dumb receivers everyone's going to play, like Laquon Treadwell, like Laviska Shenault, like Guyton and Palmer, but also he's a pivot off Austin Hooper where everyone's going to play. So, yeah, I kind of like Donovan Peoples-Jones in that cheap range quite a bit. And then I wish I came into the show wanting to say Elijah Moore. I don't know if we're going to get him. If we get him, I still think he's a good skinny stack option with Kamara or Taysom Hill.
Unfortunately, it will be Jamison Crowder, Sisson, without Corey Davis, without Elijah Moore.
Would you – where do you come in on Jamison Crowder in large fields?
Oh, I totally play him. Not thinking we would not have Elijah Moore, not really preparing for it because it's Friday at this point. You don't actually have to, like, prepare. Like, but I have prepared for the show. Only 4,700, but, like, that's cheap enough that I think he affords you sort of the same type of roster build as the Guyton Palmer. He's more expensive than those guys, but he's, you know, under 5K. He affords you a similar roster build. Maybe you just have to play a really cheap defense on top of that. But like, I am totally just not, I'm neither. It's team neither. Don't play Guyton. Don't play Palmer. Like Guyton, a career wind sprinter. He probably won't even see that much of an uptick in snaps because he plays a decent amount of snaps, right? That's not the issue. It's that when he's on the field, he can't draw targets. His only role in the NFL is to just push safeties deep. And then when they lapse on that, sure, he's fine. But I don't think his role changes with Keenan Allen out. I think it's Palmer in, but there's like a reason Palmer can't get on the field. It's because he's not nearly talented enough to, at least in terms of the grand scheme of a 3 wide receiver set in the NFL, he's not making it on there. So to me, it's very mostly neither. I think if Palmer's like, you know, sub 2%, right? If we keep getting closer to lock and no one's playing him and Guyton is really popular, or like Mike Williams probably will be pretty popular, maybe he's like a viable pivot, or Jared Cook, right? If there's one that is so clearly less owned, I would think it would be Palmer. And if that is the case, maybe he's a pivot. But like, frankly, like a team loses Keenan Allen, they're probably just going to be worse. I would rather not play the entire game outside of like Eckler, who maybe is like a pivot off of the passing attack, but I'd rather just not play the Chargers, who do look to be kind of popular this week because they're good values.
I will say some people have said they, you know, they've used the targets per route run on Jalen Guyton from like the past few years. And while that is correct, I think we could be dealing with a different situation in that even at the beginning of this year, deep threat, not getting targets on his routes run. But now that was with a conservative Justin Herbert and offensive scheme. Whereas if it sticks from last week, like Justin Herbert led the league, led all quarterbacks and depth of target, not only on early downs, but 10.7 depth of target throughout the game. And so that was a league high mark. And so like, if that's the case, Guyton we know is a deep threat, will be running more routes. And so perhaps it's easier to earn targets when you're not playing with Anthony Lynn like last year, or your team is finally throwing downfield more. So I do think it's a different situation. If you told me to pick one or the other, I like Guyton significantly more than Palmer. But overall, when we know the field's trying to like ask this or that question, how about just the other one? How about just no, and I'll look elsewhere? That's totally fine. Let's say, since this is going to be a question anyways, we need to answer. Let's say Mike Williams is cleared on Saturday. I still have my doubts, but let's say he's cleared on Saturday. What do you do with Mike Williams chalk? Because he is an awesome play.
I mean, I probably, assuming he's like pushes 20%, which I'm looking at some ownership projections right now.
He would put 20%. Yeah.
Yeah. If he gets over, like, I probably wouldn't play that much of him. Like, it does feel very fragile for Mike Williams, who throughout his career has never up until this point commanded anything over like a 17% target share. He hasn't actually even gotten to a 17% target share until this year. Like, he's clearly been a role player all of his career. Even up to this point, he was only running, like he was only getting like an 80% snap share. He wasn't even like a full down, like full time every down player. To me, just saying Keenan Allen is out and a player whose skill set is entirely different will take over that role seems sus, as the kids would say. So I probably wouldn't play like almost any of these players. Like, to me, it's just a net negative for the offense outside of like Eckler, who I think is the closest to playing in the same part of the field and actually having talent. Because like Palmer, like I don't think Guyton, I think he just gets more like snaps as a field stretcher. Palmer, I guess, would be that guy, but like doesn't play. There's a reason he doesn't play. Eckler, although not a wide receiver by any means, would get his targets at a similar, although obviously shallower part of the field, and he's actually good at football. So I would think Eckler would, even if he is obviously going to be popular, still work as leverage off of literally everyone else in the offense because he can soak up targets, and those don't even necessarily like correlate super well to Justin Herbert because a 6-7 yard catch is worth a lot more to Austin Eckler than it is to Justin Herbert. And obviously those are all taken away from the rest of the pass catchers that people want to flock to. So to me, like, it's a pretty reasonable spot to say, like, yeah, it's a bunch of not that good players trying to take on the role of a very talented player. Let's not overthink it and play bad players at chalk. Like, bad players at chalk feels very not what I want to be doing.
And again, if you look at our DFS toolkit at NBCSportsEdge.com, Eckler is actually projecting with the most points on DraftKings among all running backs as well. And we don't expect him to be the highest roster running back. Also projecting for the most points I'm looking at on FanDuel overall. So yes, no matter what, a good play, a terrific pivot. What about a player, a situation you're fading in this slate?
Outside of the one I just mentioned where I'm not playing a lot of these guys, I think the chalky tight ends this week are particularly bad. Jared Cook, I think, will be among them. Austin Hooper as well. Like, I don't think, like, the reason Austin Hooper hasn't been putting up fantasy points is not because, like, David Njoku was taking him off the field, right? It's that he's just not that good. Like, he was still playing a reasonably high snap share, but he's just, like, a straight up, like, a mix of, like, he's Hayden Hurst, right? If Kyle Pitts were out, think about this. If Kyle Pitts were out, I don't think we'd be dying to play Hayden Hurst. Like, maybe he'd be a fine, at 7% rostered, he's a fine value, right? But, like, if people are actually going to think that this is a really big change in the usage for Austin Hooper, no, count me out on that. And the same with Jared Cook, although I think Jared Cook is probably at least a little more viable, but both of them, right? These very suspect tight ends who I don't think are that good. And I think the fact that other players are out is going to overinflate what we do with them. Like, we saw Foster Moreau, who actually does have this track record, a small one, but he did have some sort of semblance of, we had seen it happen before. We haven't seen this happen before, right? We haven't seen Keenan Allen go out and Jared Cook tear it up. We haven't seen Harrison Bryant out and all of a sudden Austin Hooper is a 25% target share tight end. We don't even have a prior that should support this necessarily. We're just trying to make the puzzle pieces fit. I think we're doing so because we want, or at least the people playing Hooper, the people playing Cook, they want a cheap 30-whatever-100 tight end because they can't afford to play the good tight ends because they're playing Godwin, Diggs, Brady lineups, right? So I think this is more of people trying to fit the puzzle pieces together where there may actually not be a puzzle to be built.
Among the cheap running backs, because I think it's quite easy to get off and fade most of them, honestly. I think they all suck. But like, among all the cheap running backs, like, which are the ones you are the least interested in? And like, on my list, I have Javonte Williams, Deontay Foreman, Jeff Wilson, one of the Jets guys, JD McKissick, and then I think Rashad Penny will probably be the highest rostered among the Seattle guys.
So the Seattle, I assume they're getting Collins back this game, are they?
They are, which is why I think I'm going to be confused by the time I look up and see like 8-10% Penny, but I think it's coming.
I don't think we'll get 8-10% Penny. I really think there's no way, right? Like, obviously Penny saw.
People like Rashad Penny. And it's a spot against Texas. People love Rashad Penny, but yes, Alex Collins was inactive.
Collins was inactive. Now they're flipping it from what I've seen, Adrian Peterson, because he's not on. It's so another, we talk about, I think, the IR rules where players returning from IR practice, but we don't know their status. Adrian Peterson, we don't get to know his technical practice status because he reverts to the practice squad and they don't do practice for those players.
Oh,
just
don't. It's week 14. No one's listening. We can argue. Don't even get me started on this because like every reporter noted the Kenny Stills wave. Dude, Kenny Stills is at Saints practice literally 3 days later because they just re-signed him to the practice squad. Like, no one getting cut matters this year because they're just going to revert and then re-sign with the same team. Doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, and then at some point I have to like figure out how many times a player has been cut or a player not been cut, they revert because you can only go up so many times. So I'm like Googling, like I'm looking through our past blurbs. I'm like, is he now actually like forever on the roster? It is truly miserable experience. One of the many technicalities of the NFL. It's miserable. But yeah, I wouldn't, you know, AP not playing, Collins back in the lineup. We saw how terrible, like none of these players are good. Like it's another spot. None of these players are good. It's a good spot, but that's not really like what I'm like trying to do. I'd rather play good players in bad spots because I think their talent and their situation is more likely to overcome a good defense or whatever. So I wouldn't play them. I wouldn't play any of the Lions players if they even draw a modicum of ownership. It's the Lions. We don't play terrible. Like I'm not playing a running back who I'm not sure what their role is on an offense that's just dreadful. The Jets are, I would argue, they have a higher implied team total. I would actually take the Lions team total maybe over them. But Jets, I'm not playing committee back Jets running backs at an 18 team total when they're going to get killed by the Saints in a slow, ugly game where both teams try and run. One's just not good at it. So those players I wouldn't play. Give me the San Francisco backfield spiel, because that's a backfield I would at least be interested in with Elijah Mitchell out.
I think it's the same thing, right? Jeff Wilson,
they're good, though. That's why I wouldn't play. Like, I was never playing Jamal Williams chalk because his team sucks. Like, right. At least 49ers are good, right?
And it is a pace down game. If you look at established runs, Pat Thorman article, it is going to be a slowest pace game. The 49ers combined for the fewest snaps per game in the league. But we could be talking about efficiency and a blow up spot. I want to talk about that game a little more. Well, I'll give you the Jeff Wilson spiel. We're at the end of the show, though. I want to get into that game a little more. But yeah, Jeff Wilson, we've seen this two full practices now. So we're not worried about the knee injury. Twitter doctors, who are very smart, do say there's high re-aggravation cause. Like, there's risk there. At the same time, though, full on Thursday, full on Friday, we know what happens. We've seen this show before. He's going to get every carry, but he's not going to be targeted. It's going to be Jamichael Hasty getting targeted. So that's what I'm worried about. Like, even at his price on FanDuel, remember, we can make up points easily on FanDuel with touchdowns. We can luck into touchdowns. On DraftKings, we like those high reception floors. So I think Beasley's an acceptable play on DraftKings, but not on FanDuel and skinny stacks. So on FanDuel, like Jeff Wilson, 5K cheaper. Totally, like, that's awesome. I'll be sucked into that chalk all day, no big deal. But on DraftKings, I think it's a harder case to make, knowing he's going to max out, literally max out at two targets. I would envision him with none.
Yeah, I think it's perfectly fine argument. I just wanted to get your take on how the backfield is split too, which I did. So yeah, I think I'd still be more interested in targeting this backfield than like the Lions. So I don't think that's saying that much, right? I don't think that means I'm going crazy for any of them.
Well, Lions are my fade as well. Now, we could talk about the Javonte Williams thing, because if Melvin Gordon is active, Javonte Williams is an awesome play. I wonder how many people are going to be scared off of Javonte Williams, assuming it's going to be a committee. And I assume it's going to be a committee as well. But it's 10-point favorites against a team without DeAndre Swift, without TJ Hawkinson, and just on backup running backs in altitude on the road, like, it's probably Javonte Williams' second half anyways. And so, like, I would love it as price. $5,900, I'll take that risk. I'll take 15 touches, and let's hope for some efficiency.
Yeah, I think it was totally viable to play relatively affordable Javonte when he was the 1B in his backfield, just because we saw how efficient he was. And it did seem relatively tied to his talent, right? Like, when a player just randomly has a spike in yards per carry, it's oftentimes just explained by a long run or playing a bad opponent or something like that. But this does seem pretty intrinsically tied to his ability to break tackles and create long runs, which he has done at one of the highest rates at the NFL this year as a rookie, and he did coming out of college as well. So I think it's reasonable to project him to be among the most efficient running backs in the league. Now he's a really realistic chance to flip from being the 1B to the 1A. And I think, yeah, I think if Melvin Gordon is inactive for some reason, it would be probably acceptable chalk to play if you get a unique build somewhere else, but it is really good.
I think it's a free square.
Yeah, it's really difficult. I think you have to take it at that point, but he's perfectly viable. And if ownership reacts the way I think it would with Melvin Gordon in, that's, I think, where you would get the best possible, in terms of like the expected value of the play, the best possible Javonte.
What if Mike Boone on the COVID list, of course, on Friday, close contacts are pending, going to be on Saturday. We know it's usually the position room that gets infected. I don't know if that's the medical term for it, whatever. What if Javonte Williams is a close contact?
Melvin Gordon's
the only running back. Is Melvin Gordon, do we perceive him, should we perceive him as the same chalk as we would Javonte if he's the only running back?
I think so. I especially think like my visceral reaction, because as soon as you said what if, I was like, don't make me think about Melvin Gordon as a lead back once again. But I think my visceral reaction would probably be the field's reaction, or at least color their reaction, to where like, we are so excited to get Javonte and no one would want to really play Melvin Gordon. Plenty of people do it because he would project well, but I don't think enough. I think he'd be a really good, like, he'll be 18% owned and he should be 30 just because of his price versus his role versus his terrible opponent. So he'd probably be a good play that I don't want to play, but I would do it.
I'm in also on the fades. I already talked about the Bucks Bills over. I'm also in on fading the Lions running backs. I think it's a good correlation spot actually for Javonte and the Broncos defense. And then you just call it a day. Remember, we run back for ceiling. Mm-hmm. We don't need to run back the Lions. Do not worry about that. That's why I also, like, I wanted Elijah Moore. I don't know if I need to worry about, I'm open to playing James Crowder. I may get there. We're going to see how salary shakes out. But, like, I don't feel like I need to. That'd be more on DraftKings, just trying to get the floor at his price and then calling it a day.
What that Javonte Broncos defense, I'm imagining will get some amount of popularity on like Amon-Ra St. Brown as well. What St. Brown saw like 12 targets, I think 10 catches last week, if I remember that correctly. And they have no Hockenson, or I assume, isn't he like doubtful right now? So like players don't play through doubtful. So assuming people are just like targets have to go somewhere, I would imagine you get even more sort of negative correlation with a defense versus, I would imagine, a team that has a lot of chalk based on cheap prices. There's volume to go around, but the offense sucks. And I'd want to leverage that. I think those are really good spots to leverage where players are just getting played because they exist, not because of any of their talent, not because their team should put up points, just because, you know, Godwin Igubuke or Jamar Jefferson or, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown just happened to play in the NFL on a team with some targets to go around. I don't think it's a reason enough to play them if they are also popular. So that, I don't know, Broncos team is probably expensive. Lions suck, but it wouldn't be a...
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same day delivery on thousands of items like pavers or planters to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, you'll want to invite everyone over, from book club to the fantasy league, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick Scented Oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Terrible play, I guess.
What about some of your favorite sneaky stacks of the slate?
I don't want to be punished for liking Russell Wilson again, because it's not been the most fruitful venture since he's come back. But after, I believe it was a -4.2% completion percentage over expectation, just measuring a player's accuracy with adjusting for the depth of field, which Russell Wilson has been like iconically good at, because he throws, especially his deep balls, he throws at such, he completes them at such a higher rate. And he was terrible at that specific thing where you just complete more passes than you should be in his first 3 games back from the mallet finger, the pin, all that. And last week he was at like positive 16%. I think like if he is back, and like, I just don't believe that their running backs will be popular, but God, I hope they are. It'd be such a dismal play to actually try and go for that. But if he is back, his price has been, you know, come down from these peak Russell Wilson numbers, as has his receivers, either of Metcalf or Lockett. Metcalf is dealing with like a foot in like an illness or something, but he was
removed from the injury report though.
Perfect.
He's going to be fine. He's actually my favorite one-off among this game.
Yeah, I think you can even do more than one-off this game. I don't think you need to run it back. Brandon Cooks at 5,700, like obviously his role is good, but like just don't play Texans players. That's a pretty good rule of thumb to go by. It's to not play players on truly dreadful teams. I think you can just straight up say like Seahawks control the ball, but they do it through the air, because that's like, they're not doing it through Alex Collins. It's just not happening. So even if the opponent is not good,
Mark Ingram has been a saint for 6 weeks and he still leads them in touches. Like, yeah, just don't play him. Like, none of them are going to get used. It doesn't matter.
That's crazy. They didn't have anyone else. I mean, well, like Philip Lindsay was cut. Scottie Phillips, I think, got hurt. David Johnson missed the game.
Still has ankle sprain.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, a perfect not run back spot. I think you can even double. I think the prices have come down to a point and the ownership will be low enough that like, if the double hits, it will go crazy. So it's sneaky, not in that the players aren't good, but in the players have recently for a while performed poorly. But you know, I could talk myself and May even into a spattering of Russell Wilson, even doubles. Also like Gerald Everett, a perfectly viable non-popular punt tight end, not as popular as like Cook, for instance.
I kind of like DK quite a bit from that game. All right. I'm going to get two bad stacks out of the way here. That, you know, well, actually, let's start with this, because the whole point of this is to pivot off the quarterback. So let's get your thoughts on Taysom Hill and Cam Newton, because they're right there. They both offer extreme rushing upside. Cam Newton, 56% of his fantasy points with the Panthers have come on the ground. And we know he is a low-end QB1 as long as he doesn't get benched. Against the Falcons, we do not expect him to get benched. And then Taysom Hill, of course, like, even in, like, if you took away that 70-yard touchdown, I understand he dropped from the QB6 in week 13 to the QB21. But he's still in his last five starts dating back to last year, taken off on 80 of 155 dropbacks. Like, he's going to rush. That's what he does. And so, like, to me, it comes down to, you can't really play. Maybe you can play them together. I don't know. But, like, it comes down to asking yourself, who was pissed off more at the end of the day? The people who roster Kamara and get sniped by Taysom, or the people who roster Taysom and get sniped by Kamara? Or, like, Cam Newton's not going to be rostered, and here he is after he got benched in an impossible spot against an elite Dolphins defense. Like, now this is the get-right spot against the Falcons. Like, is he just the overall better play?
Yeah, if you think he's not going to be as popular, I agree. It's just to what degree, right, that he won't be as popular. If the discrepancy is like 2 or 3%, I'd probably just play Taysom. But if the discrepancy is like you get 5% Cam, which I don't think so, because he, if it weren't for Taysom, would be very cash viable just because his rushing production is so good still, despite him not being able to throw anymore, really.
I bet he's the number one cash quarterback consensus.
Taysom?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Cam probably would be close. He's a little riskier, but he would be close if Taysom was just off, you know, he's on an island game or whatever, because they're similar plays. Although at this point, like, Cam also has like a risk of getting benched and a risk of PJ Walker coming in. But I think if you think the discrepancy is like Cam Newton at 5, Taysom at 13, 14, which he totally could get to, the cash quarterback typically does push to that number, I would take Cam over Taysom because the thesis of the play is basically identical. And it is a, you know, equally as good, if not maybe better matchup for the passing attack versus a horrid Atlanta defense. So if you're making the same, I think if you're making the same argument, it'd be like even down to how you would project it for one player over or one player equal as another. In this case, it's like, well, it's a good matchup. It's a bad defense. And obviously the rushing production is nuts. You should probably just take the less owned of them. And if you want to, if you feel so inclined to stack, DJ Moore with like a top five weighted opportunity rating is a better stacking option than whatever mess the Saints are going to try and run out. Now they don't even have Deontay Harris, who was suspended. Like Tre'Quan Smith is averaging like 6.8 targets over his past four, I think, games. It's just not enough to me.
The Millie Maker play, again, the Millie Maker, because it's useless, is Terrace Marshall, who's getting some coach speak and playing more than being healthy scratched. And it's a new OC, so maybe like tight ends aren't involved. Maybe it is Terrace Marshall as a third receiver. That's strictly Millie Maker. I think I would just play Cam Newton naked and take the rushing touchdowns, hoping to get them over Chuba Hubbard in this spot. But yeah, I think Cam's an awesome play. I say all that, though, to say I think Jimmy Garoppolo, let's start there, is a good tournament play. Most importantly, we like offenses where perhaps we can't predict the outcome, but we can predict where the ball's going to go. And it is George Kittle and Brandon Ayuk. Those are your only stacking options. Again, Jeff Wilson doesn't get targets. That's hasty, but also it's not enough to matter. So we know where the ball is going to go. You just need, in a low volume spot, you need some efficiency, but you know what you can get efficiency from? The Bengals and the 49ers if they're on. So I like Jimmy Garoppolo if you're paying down and not paying to the rushing quarterbacks. I'd like to see where they come in at, especially because George Kittle's in an amazing spot since everyone's going to pay down at tight end or pay up for Kelsey. Here's George Kittle with arguably a higher ceiling than Kelsey. So love him in that regard. And then now that the T. Higgins, Jamar Chase salaries are slowly evening out and mirroring one another, Chase, I think we've reached the point now where no one wants to play him. I think
do the other one every time. Just do the other one. Whatever one's popular, do the other one. And you can say that for like,
I think it's a great spot for the teammate pivot and Jamar Chase. I even like George Kittle, Jamar Chase skinnies. But yeah, Jamar Chase, I think, is an awesome play as well. Hoping that those double coverage brackets go away now. Yes, he's 0 for 7 on targets 20 plus yards downfield since week 8. And, you know, T. Higgins has seen 9 in that time, catching 7 of them. But overall, like, yeah, Chase is in an awesome spot. Hope he doesn't drop him. Like, he has 2 drops since week 8. Hope he doesn't drop those touchdowns. But he's in a great play, especially at his decreasing salary. And then also the uglier one that I think I like more. We know Austin Hooper's chalk. We know Donovan Peoples-Jones is the deep threat against a very bad defense. So what brings these two together? It is Baker Mayfield, who is the healthiest he will ever be for the rest of the season off of a bye. We are they are familiar foes. Yes, I already made the excuse about division games back-to-back. We've seen them shoot out in their second game last year. And then also, again, if the Browns don't blitz, then we get some juice from the Ravens side as well. And that makes this game a sneaky shootout. Kind of like Baker doubles with Marquise Brown runs backs.
That's fine.
Because I hate myself.
We talked about playing.
No, it's fine as you're saying. I hate that.
I don't love it, to be honest. I would rather play with Jarvis Landry, too. I don't know. I don't think Jarvis Landry would be like that popular. No one wants to play Jarvis Landry, but.
No. None of them are going to be popular except Hooper.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I'd rather not. I'm just not playing Austin Hooper. He's probably one of the first players I can comfortably just X out of my player pool. Not playing him at all. Jarvis Landry, I mean, he did what he got, his first 100-yard game since it feels like 2012, I believe, versus the Ravens. Yeah, there's some juice there. I think Landry, Peoples-Jones is how I would play it, with the caveat that I'm definitely not playing that. I like the Jimmy Garoppolo thing, though. You had me at Jimmy. Jimmy has just been
Jimmy, but not Baker?
Come on. Jimmy's been efficient. He has been, among the league's most efficient passers this year. They just choose not to do it. And also, I do believe that efficiency is sort of generated by his scheme, in the sense of you choose spots that you want your quarterback to be efficient in. Therefore, it's sort of chicken or egg situation. So I'm not giving him all the credit in the world, but he's been far more efficient than Baker, who's literally been EPA per dropback, one of the worst quarterbacks over the past month or two, coinciding with his injury. So if you think he's healthier, it's obviously a very weak passing defense. I understand the thesis of it. To me, once we hit Jimmy, we had dove deep enough. And at that point, we were still very at the extent of the depth we should go.
And more, if you're paying down at quarterback at that range, I do like it. Again, I really do like Jimmy and Baker. I got to figure out how it works in the lineups. It's more about, though, asking yourself, what am I losing getting off Taysom and Cam, the two rushing quarterbacks, to pay down the similar range for those other two quarterbacks. So Baker would need to go 300. Jimmy would need to go 300 to get that 5-point bonus on DK. Or you need to go 280 with hoping one rushes in, sneaks in from the 1 yard line, which you can get lucky. That's fine. But that's kind of what you're sacrificing. I would not do them on FanDuel. Remember, FanDuel's only $2K more to spend up for Lamar. I think Lamar's an awesome play on FanDuel in that same stack, because that $2K goes a lot further on DraftKings than it is. You can find 2K easily on FanDuel, so I wouldn't worry about it at all. Having said that, let's go ahead and move on to some loose notes really quick in the show. We didn't really touch on this at the beginning when mentioning the games, but what do you think about the running backs for the Chiefs in that spot? Because knowing they are have the third highest EPA defensively since week nine, since they were murdered by the Titans, CEH or even Darrell Williams, if you want to get cute, as their third receiver. That's what they are now. Mahomes, since week 8, leads the league in yards after the catch. 65% of his production have come after the catch, because he now suddenly has, in that span, the 17th highest running back target rate. The running backs averaging 7.5 targets per game are his third receiver. It's not Byron Pringle. It's not Josh Gordon. It's the running backs. And so, what about CEH or Darrell Williams and the Chiefs defense?
Yeah, I think it's perfectly fine. I probably will play a decent amount of specifically Clyde. I don't think I would play Darrell, although I couldn't really fault you for it. I think he might be better than CEH. But we saw CEH usage.
He ran more routes than CEH. That's the only reason I mentioned it.
Yeah, we saw CEH come back to a role that almost surprised me with how well Darrell had played. He comes back with 12 and 14 or 14 and 16 carries and 5 targets in his past 2 games. So he's perfectly viable, and he plays on the team with the highest implied team total. They are favorites at home, favorites of 10 points. That is the spot of a running back we absolutely want to be playing. So I think, now that you mentioned it, I probably should be playing a decent amount of CEH, because it's not like I'm playing 50% Mahomes lineups, right? I'm not playing that crazy amount. I'll just be significantly over the field. That still leaves, if I play him in a third of my lineups, it still leaves 66 some odd percent of my lineups available to play CEH. I don't think I'd play him together. He just doesn't have enough. Like you said, he doesn't even lead the team in running back routes. So I think it's perfectly fine. It's probably something I'd even be over the field on. Let me throw one back to you, where I don't know if you had thought about this player yet. Julio Jones, Ryan Tannehill. They play a terrible team. It's actually decent against the run, and the running backs all suck, like Keonta Foreman and Jerry McNichols coming back to replace Dontrell Hilliard, I assume. I don't want to play those running backs. Julio Jones looks like he's back. He's practicing in full, although that's on the injury report because the IR thing we complained about. But I don't know. Julio Jones was really good like 5 years ago. Tannehill was good 6 weeks ago when they're still running play action, and they play one of the bottom defenses. So is that Baker Mayfield level? Feels like it.
No. Julio Jones is actually in my notes as well. Okay. Wide receiver 75 in fantasy points per game. That's the issue, is that he's been bad this year. It's not really even about being healthy. He's just been bad this year.
Yeah.
And so I know, like, he's going to be popular. That's the thing too, right? I can make a case that 5,400 is the correct pricing. It's not even undervalued. It's just the correct pricing, right?
Yes, totally. I think.
Like, should he be worth, should Julio Jones at this stage of his career, this year, like, should he be worth more than 5,400? That's the question we're trying
to ask. I think if we saw this, like, say AJ Brown missed the first two games, or missed the first game of the season, and we had not had any prior coming into this year on how poorly he would play, you could say maybe he should be like 6'1", 6'2", but we have seen a pretty bland streak of in and out of the lineup type game. So yeah, it's a fine price.
Yeah, I think it's okay price. I think he's going to be over rostered, so I'm not going to get there. I believe people are going to start recognizing, oh, he's back. Like, this is the one time he's going to be under rostered. But even at 5,400, I think people will see that as a value. I don't know if I see that as a value. I don't think I do. So that's kind of where I'm at.
I don't think people play him. I think people think Julio is bad at this point. And, like, especially with the amount of times he has left the field and burned them in that way, I don't think people play Julio. I would bet he comes in sub 5%. That'd be my guess.
This is another loose note. Why is Dontrell Hilliard 7K on FanDuel? Did they just fall asleep? Like, what happened in the algorithm? Did they get to type 70? They put him at 7K. Imagine 13 touchdowns. You already got lucky in playing 13 to touch Dontrell Hilliard one time this year before their bye. Now you want to put him at 7K, whereas Deontay Foreman is 6K? What are we doing? What are we doing here?
Yeah, I don't know. That reminds me of, ironically, this one panned out to be the other direction when Cordell Patterson immediately jumped up to like 8K or whatever on FanDuel. That one panned out. This one will not pan out. I don't even, like, Jeremy Nichols returned to practice from the concussion. He was playing on average like about 30% of the team snaps with Derrick Henry on the field. He was very clearly a part of their offensive game plan. He had a freaking 12-target game in, again, with Derrick Henry active. So I think he comes back and cannibalizes Dontrell Hilliard's role. Maybe they split it. Maybe they give Hilliard like a chance at repeating the magic of last week. A long run got him over 100. But no, like, I hope anyone, like, if you had planned on playing Dontrell Hilliard on FanDuel, I will get back on FanDuel this week and you can play me head to head. It's a terrible play. It's awful.
What do you think about knowing, like, the landscape? Again, step back of the slate. Very few good cheap running backs. I think Jeff Wilson, just because he's 4,400, I mean, maybe even pay that to allocate your salary elsewhere. Like, who cares if he's a good player or not? It's a 20-touch running back if he stays healthy for 4,400. That's the argument you make. I'll probably play him for that reason. But what do you think about flexing Foster Moreau in a Chiefs stack? So Kelsey, you flex 4K Moreau, and then you go from there.
I probably wouldn't. Just because he's 4K. At that point, you can find wide receivers with three targets, but a 20 ADOT or something insane where they can actually find 22 points. And Moreau with, I believe, like a sub 6 or 7 ADOT in his starts is not that type of player. Like, he's perfectly fine value at tight end. I still think at 4K, he's fine. He's not like a bad play. It's probably a correct, maybe even a slight underprice. You said he played like over 80% of the snaps. That's still as much as most starting but not elite tight ends get. And it's a good game environment for just a high volume passing attack. To that point where at 4K you can find a wide receiver who is probably going to outscore him, I think you probably can.
We've seen Teddy reach at least 38 attempts three times this year. Most time when they're in negative game script and being forced to score, that's the issue. But do you have any interest, knowing the blowout, in the Broncos passing game?
I don't think so. Kareem tried to sell us on Courtland Sutton, I think, on the Wednesday show, if I remember correctly.
Go away, Kareem.
I would not be playing any of these players.
That would be a good, I mean, I don't know if it's good, but that'd be a tournament play. I think I'm out on Courtland Sutton.
I like it. That's a good tournament. Well, it's a tournament play. It's a play you could play in a tournament, was what you were able to say about it.
I'm sure. Yeah. Kareem had some good notes on it, but I'm going to leave that one to Kareem. I'll take Donovan Peoples-Jones, an equally bad play. We mentioned Jeff Wilson. Let's say Deebo Samuel's active. What do you do? Because isn't he really interesting if he's active?
Is he more interesting with all the running backs hurt, or is he less interesting? Because as soon as they started using him in that pseudo running back style, which it's not like he was like Cordarrelle Patterson strictly playing running back. It's not that level. But I think banking on him being like a really productive rusher, if it comes at the expense of his any real amount of snaps as a receiver, is a little dicey to me.
Well, that and you didn't get a discount on either DraftKings or FanDuel. Like, even on DraftKings, he's 8K. Tyreek Hill's 8,500. So, I mean, that's the pivot because no one's going to play him off injury. And instead, everyone's going to find the 500 to go for Tyreek Hill. But that's why you're playing Debo, hoping everything's fine, and then hoping that game shoots out.
Yeah, I think that's the best argument you can make, that he will be very unpopular. I think the popularity is probably warranted. He would be really, though, given that we don't, like, it doesn't look super promising that he'll play this week. So if you were to sort of randomly come up as a overnight, you know, Saturday Schefter bomb, he'd be like sub 3% or something. And he's among the highest players, or at least receivers, in yards from scrimmage. You have to caveat it as yards from scrimmage because so much of it is rushing production. But I mean, he was early in the season over 100 yards receiving per game. And then when it shifted to rushing, he stayed at a similar level, just getting there through a different avenue. So he'd be viable, especially because I think that game is at least a little interesting. Like you noted, it's a pace down spot. Both teams actually play pretty slow and want to run the football, but both teams are capable of being really efficient, and I don't think they'll be that popular at all. So viable. I'm not sure I'd be getting there, though.
Interesting for sure. The only caveat is Chiefs 1 p.m., 49ers 4:25. So it's not even a late swap thing. You have to make your choice beforehand, or unless you had like Godwin Evans, you're like, okay, well, I can pivot off this. I no longer can play the stack. I have to pay down for Garoppolo, pay up for Debo and Ayuk or Kittle or something like that. So you can make those pivots if you need to, if your 1 p.m. chalk fails. And then knowing everyone's paying down, is it just very clear to pay up a tight end? Or is there someone below that you are gravitating towards that no one else sees?
No, I don't have any like really gal brain like this player at 2,900 or whatever. I mean, those players are perfectly fine. I think typically we get ownership that projects, you know, Austin Hooper to put up 14 points and Ricky Seals-Jones coming back in a good role. Maybe not 100% because we did see Logan Thomas rotated with Bates a little bit in his first game back from injury. So maybe they break their paradigm. But like Ricky Seals-Jones, like we'll project for within 1 or 2 points of Austin Hooper probably, but his ownership will be sub, you know, 5% less than that. So I like those type of pivots. I think James O'Shaughnessy over Foster Moreau last week, right, was a perfectly good play. They project for similar roles, just efficiency was worse for Moreau. So I think those type of plays are fine, but really like the high leverage options are to pay up for any of the pay up spots.
Oh, and knowing that the same price on DraftKings, what do you think about, since everyone goes Dak, Lamb, and Hooper, or Gallup, whatever, what do you think about, since Zeke and Lamb are the same price, Dak, Zeke, and Cooper?
I don't want to play I don't want to play Zeke.
You don't want to play Zeke?
It does make...
If we get like 8 targets Zeke, though, knowing Pollard's out, that's the argument here.
I think my only problem with playing Zeke for his receiving value is that I think of all pass-catching value, it probably correlates with the quarterback the least, because I have, like, Zeke's really good receiving line probably looks like 8 for 33. And those are just like rush attempts. They're just rush attempts. They're just like bringing the pace down. They're right, giving you so little upside. Whereas I think Austin Eckler, on the other hand, and peak Alvin Kamara, when we were getting Alvin Kamara, they actually have the chance to break a long play, even if their ADOT is still very low among, if you count them among wide receivers. Whereas like, I just don't see how Zeke has really a large amount of positive correlation like a wide receiver does with his quarterback. I think Eckler arguably does. It's still not as much as Mike Williams, but I think, you know, that's a spot where I can see how they both achieve a ceiling together. I don't really see Zeke as contributing to a massive ceiling from Dak. I saw Yahoo tweeted out that they have their live final, I believe, this week. Always nice to see, like, Yahoo. Also, they just, like, randomly, they do, like, a ton of, like, overlay stuff where they intentionally overlay their contest. They had the Thanksgiving contest, like, $1 to enter, and everyone got paid out. But it got me thinking, I have a Yahoo account. I don't play it a ton. I was locked out for a while and had to figure out how to sign back in because it was like an AOL email. I use an AOL.
That's a great promotion of the Yahoo DFS.
No, it was my fault.
I got locked out of my Yahoo account and had to figure it out.
It was my fault. And they ended up helping me fix it. Good CS there. Good customer service there. Helped me fix it.
Anytime something goes wrong there, nothing goes wrong, but like anytime like Godwin Igbuke, for instance, was a safety a few weeks back ago. I just mentioned to Scott Pianowski and Andy Behrens, who have no control over that kind of stuff. I just like directing the anger towards them because they're our friends.
Yeah, their content.
They can't help out in any way.
And you're like, hey, can you go in the CMS and fix this?
Like whenever Greg Joseph was missing kicks on Thursday night, I just yelled at Denny. I was like, Denny, do something about this. He has no control over it, but I know who to yell at.
So I was thinking about Yahoo and I pulled up our projections for Yahoo. And it is, if you want to play your Baker stacks, you are not in the live final, although hopefully they do it again next year. I think it's like a 200K prize pool or maybe like 100K to first.
I am going to play next year.
Yeah. You should probably be playing in the spots where you have more regulars, like more regular people, non-DFS players playing. You should also be playing in the contest where they literally just overlay, they zero rake their contest. So those are like massive EV spots. But if you, like literally not the listener, you, I don't care if you, the listener, listen to this, Daigle, if you want to play your Baker Mayfield stacks, they're very, very cheap on Yahoo. Landry's like $15. Donovan Peoples-Jones, I guess he's $13. And Baker Mayfield, I think it's like their minimum quarterback price is 20. Yeah, he is, because Case Keenum's 20. Oh, it is literally the cheapest. And no one's going to play them. Like, people don't make those sort of massive shifts. Like, oh, well, it's like we talk about on FanDuel, right? The cheap quarterback doesn't give you as much. He's like, Baker Mayfield on Yahoo is like half the price of some quarterbacks, like the $40 quarterback. So if you want to, Yahoo also, I think, is just like a good positive EV place to play because it's easier opponents and low rake. This isn't Yahoo ad. Like, I think like Superdraft is like the same way. You should probably be playing on these spots that haven't been solved by Osmo or Rotogrinders, whatever. Like, this just smart. And I'm like lazy that I don't play as much of my action there. But you, Daigle, personally, play your terrible Baker Mayfield stacks where they're super affordable.
7X with Ross Berger. We're going to do even more with Baker this week. And with that, I think we've covered it all. We've titled our friends. Touted some bad plays. I think we're good to go for the week 14 slate. Any parting words, Kyle?
No, I think we covered everything and then a little more than I needed to cover.
Everyone should be good to go for the slate. Remember, we'll be back Sunday Night Football at halftime to review, hopefully one of us, if not us, of course, you, the listener, the viewer, Bink, since we only have 5 more weeks left to go. But until then, good luck this week. Remember, start, sit, Sunday morning, noon Eastern, presented by Applebee's. Bring me some appetizers. We'll enjoy them together when we bink a tournament. So good luck to everyone. We'll see you Sunday.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same day delivery on thousands of items like pavers or planters to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.